And welcome to the world's most listened to late night talk show. I didn't do it. I just kept it going. I'm not going to take all the credit for that one. And Mary Joyce is with us. We're going to talk with her about Bigfoot, underground bases, Antarctica, and all these other incredible mysteries. And your calls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Our final hour with Mary Joyce as we talk about the strange and mysterious. Let's talk about your book, Underground Bases Hidden in North Carolina Mountains. Tell us about that, Mary. You think the government make them?
Yes, and I'm also suspicious that maybe some of them might be involved with ETs also, because we get reports of, ships being around some of those bases.
How big are the caverns or these caves?
The one that I've gotten testimony from people who have high security clearance, and I've gotten this from two of the, such people, that the one that's known as PERI, which stands for Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute, it's on the Balsam Ridge in western North Carolina, and it's supposedly six stories deep, city size, totally self-sufficient, with everything that you need to live down there. One of the high security people that said something was that it is so big it spreads over into South Carolina, and it is near South Carolina, so that's not quite as awesome as that sounds, but it does give you an idea that it's a pretty good sized facility.
It sure is. That's amazing. How can these be built without people knowing about it?
Well, it's getting harder and harder for them to do these kind of things. In fact, the Perry Center that I just mentioned, I've gotten reports or contacts by two different men who live in the area, who apparently have grown up in the area, and we've already posted one story, and he had told me that there was digging and stuff going on again at that facility. And believe it or not, Google can be very, very helpful, and I started Googling the whole piece of property. Not only did I find a huge hole in the ground that was mostly covered by two tarps, and then you could see down between the two tarps, there were large, huge dump trucks that were being used to move soil. There were, I think they call them excavator equipment there. And then they were taking what appeared to be the soil that they were getting from beneath the ground and spreading it out on a hill, you know, kind of evenly distributed so it wouldn't be real obvious. Well, it was obvious because it was very, very light in color. The topsoil is a darker color. And I actually, with the posting, I actually went and got a photo from, I can't remember what it was now, but a geological sample. And it shows the different layers of topsoil from that area. And it's dark on the top, and it gets very light as you go down deeper. So that indicates that this dirt is being brought up from deep and spread out over this hillside. That was one thing. And then I got an email and from another man. And I'm certainly not going to read the whole thing, but I'll highlight a couple sentences. He said, "I've seen a huge bright light blocking the sky directly toward the mountains over Perry." That was one. Another one, "We've seen a convoy of military semi-trucks with covered cargo going up the mountain toward Perry with armed escorts." Another one, "For months now, we have been experiencing big booms that shake the ground."
Yep.
"So many that I've lost count, and I'm not the only one." Then he kind of goes off on another angle, and he said, "I've spoken to doctors in this area about the extremely high cancer rates here. One doctor is even trying to do a study on it and try to get the government funding with no success." Imagine that. Again, he's talking about cancer, and he says the rates are on the rise. He said in his dad's day, you never heard of these rare cancers that you do now in this area. This is one place where there may be some strange experimentation going on. That whole facility has more of an evil overtone to it than the other ones that I've written about. Long ago, there was a man, when he was a young man, worked at a tree farm near that facility, and a Christmas tree farm. And he and some of the people that worked there had seen animals in cages being carried into this facility. Why? why would that be going on? Then one of the people with the high security clearance said that they have the ability to wipe out memories there. And she was very, she was actually trying to warn people about that facility. I have myself experienced kind of a weird feeling in your head when you get close to that facility. And I've every time I've been by it, I've been with other people, they feel it too. I call it people repellent. You know, it just makes you not want to be there. That is not the only facility where they use this electronic people repellent. There is a, the most recent facility I know about is beneath the Smoky Mountain National Park. And when they were, that's a whole big long story unto itself. But one of our contributors made a trip up there to get as close to where the entrance is as possible. And of course, you can't get to it. But she said it was a beautiful day when she was driving up the mountain. The birds were singing, the sky was blue, the sun was shining. And she said the closer she got to that facility, the birds quit singing. There were, and the sounds of nature stopped. And the longer that she was there, the more she began to get a headache. Well, she just kind of over, you know, went beyond that. And when she stayed a long time, she began to actually feel nauseated. And it wasn't until she started going back down the mountain that she began to feel okay again.
What do you know about the Brown Mountain lights out there, the ghost lights of North Carolina?
I've seen them. I don't know if I've seen the ones that are as dramatic as some people have seen. It's a phenomena that has gone on forever and ever. So it predates, you know, cars and trains being in that area. So, you know, you can't blow it away as some kind of technology or some kind of human-made lights. We also have indications that there is an underground facility there. One man and his girlfriend or wife, I don't know.
He better know.
It doesn't matter anymore, I guess. But the mountain, they saw the mountain open up, and when they went back, it looked, you know, just the same. That's very, very common. When I wrote about the one under Mount Mitchell, which is the tallest mountain east of the Mississippi, you know, it was the same kind of situation.
Let's go to the phones now for you as they line up. Let's go to your neck of the woods. Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina, is not ready yet. Let's go to Rick in Bakersfield, California. Sorry about that. Go ahead, Rick.
Yes, I wanted to ask you two quick questions. Nice talking to both of you.
One at a time, so I won't forget the first one.
All right, okay. That's fair enough.
First one has to do with Antarctica. I read this article that NASA has this thing called ANITA, which is supposed to detect cosmic rays or particles coming from space. But apparently there's been a couple of instances where this ANITA thing, which is it's an acronym for Antarctic Intrinsive Transient something or other antenna. Anyway, it detected cosmic rays that were actually coming from the Earth, from Antarctica, from underneath the ground. Have you heard about that?
I have not. You know more than I do. But I'm not surprised. I think a lot is happening from beneath Antarctica that's being radiated out.
Sure.
Rather than just things coming in.
Well, there's been a couple of scientists from other countries, even from UCI, who have actually chimed in on it and said that they don't think it's a type of particle that fits into the standard model, like something that...
Like it was brought there.
Something that's never been detected or seen, you know, like they were trying to figure out with the Large Hadron Collider and detect particles that nobody theorized exist, but nobody has really proven, you know. So, yeah, it's kind of bizarre, but apparently there's some ongoing stuff going up there.
I don't think it's going to stop. Right now, unless you leave the planet, I think there are more unsolved mysteries in Antarctica than any place there is on the planet.
The other quick question... if I might,
one I can be helpful with.
I'm sure you probably could. you've done some research, a lot of research apparently, on Bigfoot. And I know I've heard stories over the years from different Native American, you know, tribes. Have you ever cross-referenced any of those stories amongst the different tribes to see but similarities might exist, or you know, the story.
I mentioned earlier that I was out in South Dakota on the Indian Reservation out there, and got both Bigfoot and Little People stories there. I have been into Tennessee, Eastern Tennessee, and seen evidence of Little People that are still living on that land. The Bigfoot are often seen in the same areas if the terrain is similar. The Bigfoot tend to like the, you know, the real rugged areas. In fact, well, anyhow, I don't need to go off on that.
Okay, next up, let's go to Mark in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hello, Mark. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Your program is very interesting to me tonight because it's two things that I have an interest in. George, you mentioned earlier how they disguise the building of these bases. We actually had one here in Raleigh. I worked for the North Carolina state government in the 80s, and we always had a story going around a gentleman who went down into a building at a mall, and he found his elevator going past his floor down into a basement area, and he opened the door, and there were men in military uniform in the hallway going back and forth down this long corridor. And one of them told him to get back on the elevator, turn it around, go back up, and forget he was ever down there.
That elevator scenario is really becoming, I'm learning more and more about that scenario. If you go to our website and click on our YouTube channel or get to that, there is a testimony by a man who describes something very similar. You know, he would go into a hangar, and then he would go downstairs, and then there would be an elevator, and, you know, sometimes two levels of an elevator. Then we've gotten report within the last year of another place that's you get to through a, I think, a water treatment type place. And the story that we got on that came from a man who worked for the power company, and he had to go in because of the power company. And in order to get there, he had to be cleared. And he went into a very ordinary-looking building. I think it was only one story high. And he went down a hallway, and then he got in an elevator. Well, this puzzled him right off the bat, because why are you getting on an elevator in a one-story building? And he went down, and, you know, he eventually, you know, got to find out about some of the stuff that was going on down there. So, yes, this elevator phenomena is quite common. But that can't be the only kind of entrance. That's the kind of entrance where, you know, let's say regular workers can get to it. There has to always be a way where they can get big equipment in. And I think I'm very convinced that there are connecting tunnels between many of these underground facilities. And from everything I've been able to piece together, they have the magnetic trails or trains that connect.
Mary Joyce with us. Her website linked up at coasttocoastam.com as we talk about creatures, Bigfoot, of course. What is your favorite all-time story, Mary, about
these creatures? I don't have one, but I want to tell you two quickies. I was hoping there'd be an opportunity for this.
Mm-hmm.
One, we always hear about Bigfoot smelling so bad. And it looks like, yeah, they do smell bad, but they can produce an odor deliberately to be off-putting, almost like a skunk. And so I was really surprised when I was contacted by a man from Texas who grew up. His name is Thomas Hughes, and he grew up 20, 30 miles west of the Sam Houston National Forest in Texas, which is due north of Houston. And he said he would keep finding this scummy stuff on the ponds and in the water tanks, and it puzzled him most of his life what this stuff was. And a very knowledgeable woman, who I can't credit at this moment, told him that the Bigfoot use yellow root, which is a wild root that, mm-hmm. that grows here also, and that they will grind it up and use it like a soap. So this man, Thomas Hughes, he tried that himself, and it created the same kind of unusual film on the water when he did it. And So he's convinced that the Bigfoot will bathe and use the yellow root to scrub with.
That gives
and
it,
yellow root is a natural antibiotic.
How about that? It gives it a little bit more intelligence than just an animal, doesn't it?
Right. And one more quickie story, because I think it's so cute. I don't want to, and it's short. There's a man, his name is Wayne Wilson. He's just a good old boy who lives back in the woods. And the loggers were cutting a lot of land where he lived. So the Bigfoot moved to property right across from where he lives and probably on his land himself. He became friends, so to speak, with the Bigfoot. And on Christmas Eve in December 2016, a baby Bigfoot was born. And these Bigfoot trusted him so much that they let him see the baby.
That's amazing.
Which I thought was a great story, especially a Christmas Eve type story. A
couple years ago, somebody called during Open Lines, Mary, and told me this story. Tell me what you think of it. He was fishing out into the wilderness, and he caught two trout. And as he had them in a little bucket, he looks up, and there's a Bigfoot 10 feet from him, staring at him. He was in shock. He's holding up the two fish, and he gives them to the Bigfoot. I mean, he didn't know what to do. He said the Bigfoot took both of them, looked at him, and gave him one back.
How nice.
Now, do you believe that?
Yeah, I do. I do. I've heard increasing numbers of stories that are, I think, very human-like. And that's the reason we're doing that movie. That's the reason we've done that script. Because we want, I think with the exception of Harry and the Hendersons, the only movies that you see about Bigfoot portray them as monsters and scary creatures. And they're much more complicated and much more human-like than people give them credit for. So this storyline that we've developed, and as I said earlier, Holly Rourke is the main writer on it, but she was inspired by stories we have on the website, and we've worked with her. In fact, she's been up here a couple times just so we could take her to Bigfoot territory just to help to flush out the story.
That's amazing, too. And give out your website again, Mary.
All right, it's skyshipsovercachers.com. Skyships Over Cachers, if you type that in, you'll probably get it. Cachers is spelled C-A-S-H-I-E-R-S, skyshipsovercachers.com.
We're going to come back in just a moment with Mary Joyce and wrap things up and take final phone calls as we talk about these incredible anomalies. Were you always interested, Mary, in this stuff when you were a little girl?
No.
You played with dolls, right?
I know. I probably enjoyed playing outside more.
Probably. Was there one episode that got you interested in this?
Well, as far as the UFO stuff goes, that actually started when I lived on the beach, on Cocoa Beach in Florida. And when you're in flatland, you actually have a better chance of seeing UFOs than you do in the mountains. Like here, I'm between two mountain ridges, and unless a UFO goes straight over between the ridges, I'm not going to see it. But that's when I first began to see them, and I was living between Patrick Air Force Base and the Space Center, so I was seeing lots of very, very interesting stuff. So I guess that got my interest started with the UFOs.
Okay, we're going to come back in a moment and take final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, our final segment here. Mary Joyce with us. We'll get to your calls as well. One of her big stories, of course, investigating the cases of Bigfoot. Mary, do you ever go out into the woods, the fields, to look for Bigfoot?
I do. I've seen the footprints. I've also, I don't really go hunting for them. I have people who see them on a regular basis take me to where they're seeing them. And there was this one mountain man who lived at the top of a ridge. You got there by a gravel single lane road, and then we got out of his truck and we walked about a half mile because he wanted to take me to a cave where he said the Bigfoot would, you know, take refuge, you know, on a regular basis. And so as we got in there, I heard this bird sound that didn't sound like a bird. And then in the direction that we were headed, the same kind of mechanical bird sound was heard, and then everything got quiet. And to this day, I think it was one Bigfoot telling the other Bigfoot that two annoying humans were headed in their direction.
Let's go to the phones. Next up, let's go west. Christian in San Pedro, California. Hi, Christian. Go ahead.
morning, George.
Great.
I've got a question. I have read and just reread, you know, the famous, infamous Behold the Pale Horse by William Cooper.
That's right.
And I've read, you know, some of his chapters. For example, I'm looking at the table of contents right now. As an example, Chapter 1, Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. Let me see, Chapter 9, Anatomy of an Alliance. Chapter 11, Coup de Grace, which is about how Nixon was toppled. Chapter 12, which was the secret government. Now, I've read the different chapters, and it's just, I just cannot, my opinion is, I think that the book that he wrote, the information that he presents, his case is very genuine. Because when I'm reading through the chapter, he mentions certain names of individuals, and it's just like the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission. So I wanted to get your guest on, what is her opinion of Behold the Pale Horse by William Cooper? And George, for heaven's sake, when are you going to have Jesse Ventura on your show? He's long overdue.
Jesse hasn't been on in a couple of years.
How is he doing?
He seems to be okay. You know, he spends a lot of his time in Mexico.
Yeah.
He lives there a lot. But, Mary, I don't know if you're familiar with the work of the late William Cooper.
I read his book many years ago. I think we even did an article on the website about it. My memory doesn't retain everything, but I do remember that I was left with the feeling he was being very real and authentic.
Killed in a shootout with police officers.
Oh, yeah.
Tragic, very tragic situation.
No, I even called the morgue when I was doing the research to find out if some of the stories were true. So, yeah, somewhere, I don't know if you can just type in his name or in our search bar and find it or not. Sadly, I'm not in front of my computer, so I can't help you more than that.
Back to the phones. Barry in Rock Hills, South Carolina is with us. Hello, Bear.
Hello there, George. What a pleasure it is to speak to you again, buddy. I was just talking to Tommy. I understand y'all are coming to Miami and going to go over to see the Carl Castle while you're there.
Yes, we are. He tells you too much.
You're going to love it, buddy. I'm telling you. I think you know I've been there about 15 times. I used to live in Homestead. But anyway, for Mary Joyce, girlfriend, I have been to your little hometown of Cashiers, North Carolina, many times on Highway 64 on my way up with my wonderful wife, Martha, to Highlands, North Carolina, where we had a condominium. And I love that area, and I know you do too, especially in the summer.
It's a very pretty area. I actually live in Silva, which is about 45 minutes from Cashers. But I certainly know that area and have traveled it quite a bit. And obviously you're not going to find the kind of things we're talking about off of Highway 64, but that general area does have a lot of activity.
Well, that's what I was getting ready to say. Martha and I used to travel out from Highlands and travel all the back roads over there between Highlands and Murphy, North Carolina, which is right there in the crux of North and South Carolina and Tennessee. And I remember around Bat Cave, North Carolina, seeing lots of military-type vehicles all over the place, everything from Humvees.
Well, what I find very interesting, I mentioned earlier about the facility called Perry, P-A-R-I, and there are no official military bases anywhere in the area, but the nearest town of any size is called Rosman, and I have seen military vehicles there, and many, many other people have reported seeing them there, and you just wonder, you know, under normal circumstances, why would they be seen so often there? That just reinforces the idea that there is an underground base going on.
Mary, isn't the New Madrid Fault that way too, where earthquakes occur?
No, that's
I know it's
that
more.
Would be that's further west. That's
a little west. I know St. Louis is in that path.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That. Okay, but you're okay there.
Yeah.
Annie in Alabama, welcome to the show. Hi, Annie. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking the call, George.
You're very welcome.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes, go ahead.
Mary, I'd like for you to tell me if you believe a Bigfoot could have done this. It was done too neatly and nicely for it to have been a deer. I was bringing in groceries, and I went inside with a few, and when I went back out sometime later, the loaf of bread was gone, so I retraced my steps, and I found the loaf of bread in a tree, empty except for two slices, and it was done so nicely and so neatly.
Whoa.
I couldn't believe Deer did it. Do you think a Bigfoot would have done it if he knew?
I'll real quickly tell you two things that might confirm what happened to you. Number one, we had a woman who lives in Bigfoot territory, and we have to take our garbage to the garbage dump here. We don't have garbage men.
You got to do it yourself.
We have to do it ourselves. So she had her garbage bag tied up on her porch, intending to take it the next day to the dump. And when she got out there, somebody had untied it and gotten the food out of it, and no wild animal would do that. And she's in an isolated area, so it's not like humans would have done it. And because there are Bigfoot sightings in the area, we pretty much concluded the Bigfoot had done it and had been rather neat about it. You know, wolves or any other wild animal would have torn the bag apart. Then we did a food experiment one winter, and we were putting out different kinds of food at a pathway where there was evidence that the Bigfoot was going on a regular basis. And we just wanted to see what the Bigfoot liked to eat. And at one point in our experiment, we would put things in a cooler, like you would take to carry a six-pack in. And the lid would be, the food would be taken, and the lid would be replaced. And again, this is in an area where it wouldn't have been, you know, humans going by to be so neat about it. So, yeah, it could very well have been a very neat Bigfoot.
I love that story. Let's go. First-time caller, Nick's with us in Fullerton, California. Nick, hi there.
Yes. Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Hi, Mary. This is I'm fascinated with Bigfoot, and I was not about 10 years ago until I was wondering, have you ever heard of a radio host by the name and author by the name of Michael Medved?
Yes.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but he believes in Bigfoot, and he talks about it in one of his books. And I take Michael Medved very seriously as, you know, a radio host and author. And it was then that I decided I was going to go ahead and sincerely think that the existence of Bigfoot could be true. So I became fascinated. Now, Mary, I have a question to ask you. I know that there is many different theories about Bigfoot. The one theory that I'm kind of pondering up is it possible, or have you heard, that Bigfoot could be a shapeshifter that tragically got stuck in this dimension due to some spiritual impact that might have happened?
There is some thought, Mary, that Bigfoot is dimensional, not physical. What do you think?
They are very, very physical. But they may have abilities to get in and out of the physical.
May they?
It's just like with spirits. We will. People will see messengers, you know, like Pleiadians or something, that will appear in solid form, sometimes do a healing, and then they're gone. But while they're in the physical form, they're just as physical as can be. But I do think that most of the Bigfoot are just living here on the land.
And you think they're primarily species of Earth, as opposed to, you know, dropped down by extraterrestrial races or something?
According to the information that Joan Ocean got with her contact with the Sasquatch, is that they have been here on Earth longer than humans.
I assume the Cherokee was the indigenous tribes out there, right?
Mixed answer. They've been here for a very, very long time, and it is the Cherokee Reservation that's also close to where I live. But they apparently originated from the Great Lakes and migrated down here, and they're the ones who first were having the contact with the little people, and the little people were here before the Cherokee came.
Do they have any myths or folklore about Bigfoot?
Absolutely.
They do.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been seeing something too.
Absolutely.
Let's go next. West of the Rockies, Jerry's at Boise, Idaho. Hi, Jer.
Hi there.
Good to call. I'm glad you called.
Oh, I am so excited. I've wanted to tell this story every time I hear you guys talk about Bigfoot.
All right. Let's hear it.
Okay. I'm a retired barber. Retired about 6 years ago. Going on 79 now. I'd been to see my folks. My father had worked on the Grand Coulee Dam in northeastern Washington, and they lived in the town of Grand Coulee.
Okay.
Anyway, I've been to visit, and my youngest brother, we got to talking about Bigfoot, and he was, he's kind of bipolar, but he's been a good musician, and he's quite a hunter, and does a lot of things like that. Anyway, he told stories about, he said he didn't like to tell people around town because they thought he was crazy, but he went hunting a lot, and he had a run-in or two with Bigfoot, but nothing that it was more scary than dangerous for him. He was just approached because he was discovered hiding in the bushes calling for coyotes. Anyway,
you still there?
After I got home and went back to work, I was telling an old gentleman that I cut his hair for about 5 or 6 years, and he was way into his 80s, and he'd worked up there on the dam for the Bureau of Reclamation. And I was joking about my brother, and because I wasn't sure what to believe but what he told me, and I was telling this gentleman about it. Now, he was a real soft-spoken, quiet, very nice gentleman, and he grabbed a hold of the counter and pulled himself around to look me right in the eye, and he said, "Jerry," he says, "you don't want to laugh at your brother because I know it's true."
Wow.
I saw Bigfoot myself, and he says, "Well, we were working on the dam, whatever they were doing. It was a group of men that were meeting down below the dam. The dam hadn't been going that long, I don't think. But anyway, he said all of a sudden they heard these sounds, and they looked up high on the ledge way above them. It was quite a ways up, and there were three hairy-looking creatures, and it looked like a family. There was one that was really large, and he stood up, and he picked up a big, giant barrel, a full barrel, metal barrel of oil that was left up there for the construction workers, the big machinery and that. And anyway, he picked it up, and he held it above his head, this Jim said. And they just all stood there in amazement, looking, not knowing what was going to happen. And this creature threw the barrel down the hill, and it rolled right down and crashed below them.
Do they have tempers, Mary?
Yes, they do. But I don't think they, and not much differently than, you know, humans. The most elaborate story, which I am not even going to touch, really started because there was a pond on a person's property. They were using a jackhammer to repair the dam, and they broke through into something hollow, and all the water in the...
Flooded them out.
Flooded out the Bigfoot. Well, the Bigfoot was really pissed and gave them trouble for quite a long time, but it has a nice ending when it was clear that the humans didn't mean to do it, and they apologized. The Bigfoot left a little gift in front of the front door.
What was the gift?
It was like a piece of burlap that had been kind of crudely shaped into like a little basket.
That's interesting. Mary, thanks. We're out of time. Appreciate it. Mary Joyce, your website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, we'll talk about consciousness and a modern-day mystic.